Welcome to a special edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga. I'm joined by Paul Hoynes in the studio today. Special to get Paul into the studio. And even more special is our guest today, the only player in Major League Baseball history with 50 home runs and 50 doubles in a season. He's one of six players in Major League history with nine straight 100 RBI seasons, a five-time All-Star, five-time Silver Slugger, led the American League in home runs in 1995 and RBIs three other times. Paul, you know I'm talking about none other than Albert Bell. Albert, it's a pleasure to have you on. Good to hear from you.
Hey, how you guys doing? Thanks for having me.
Well, Paul, this is actually a big week for Albert. The 2019 committee for the Today's Game for the Baseball Hall of Fame has met, and they continue to meet, and their ballot is going to be announced on Sunday at the beginning of the winter meetings. And Albert is one of 10 finalists, along with guys like Oral Hershiser, Will Clark, Joe Carter, Charlie Manuel. Albert, what's it feel like to be a finalist among you know, some of these great names as well? But you know, you're up there as high as any of them with you know, in terms of making a case to be elected to the Hall of Fame.
You know, it's very exciting to be considered for the Hall of Fame. And you know, if you look at those players, you know, I've played with just about all of them on you know, different teams. And, you know, to finally have my numbers recognized, I know there's always an argument that I didn't play long enough, but to have a pretty good dominant resume for the 90s during the steroid era was something that I'm proud of. And I guess now, you know, maybe people are taking a second look at my numbers and considering that. And, you know, whether I make it or not, it's just always nice. You know, to be considered. It's an honor, you know, to be able to play Major League Baseball and to play with some great guys, some great teammates. You know, I see, you know, when Charlie Manuel was in Cleveland and, you know, he had a nice managerial career, you know, with the Phillies. So, you know, I'm definitely excited and honored.
Albert, you mentioned the steroid era in which you played, and I've talked to you several times about this, and you were adamant that you did not use steroids. And why was that?
You know what? It was just something that I was kind of afraid of, you know, because I knew, you know, that steroids had, you know, different effects on, you know, different people, and I just always thought, you know, if you take it, you know, may have just a adverse effect on me, and you know, things may not work out as well planned. You know, it's a big chance and big risk, you know, on your body, and I just wasn't really willing to take that risk. And I, you know, I felt real comfortable. You know, when I was playing, I felt real comfortable playing somewhere between like 225 pounds. And then as the season progressed, you know, you lost a little weight, and I probably was down between like 216 and 220. And I just didn't think I wanted to weigh 230 or 240 or even 250 and try to play with all that extra weight.
Well, Hoynesy, all you got to do is look back to the first game of the ALDS in 95. Albert showed you why he didn't need to use the steroids. That was he flexed on the Red Sox after he hit that home run. That was all you needed, right, Albert?
Yeah, you know what, it was, you know, that was a great moment. You know, the adrenaline was going, and, you know, I had a chance to, you know, to impact the game, and, you know, the pitcher made a mistake, and I always considered myself a great mistake hitter, and, you know, put a good swing on it, and you know, got a chance to, you know, to help our team win and you know, get to the World Series. But, you know, I really took pride in, you know, taking care of myself. You know, you can ask, you know, any of the trainers, you can ask any of the strength coaches from, you know, the three different teams how I worked out, you know, how I was pretty regimented on my diet. And, you know, I wish I was still regimented on that same diet today.
You and me both.
we all wish we looked like we did in 95. Yeah, that's that's it.
Albert, when you look at your, you know, when they talk about Hall of Fame you know, Hall of Fame players, they usually, you know, kind of zero in, voters zero in on a 5 to 7 to 9 year period where they were kind of a dominant player. Do you feel you fit into that? Like maybe from, you know, I'm looking at your stats right now, maybe from 92 or 93 all the way through your first year in Baltimore?
Yeah, you know what? I feel like I had a pretty dominant stretch. You know, I would have liked to have had, you know, a longer dominant stretch, but, you know, unfortunately didn't work out. But I, you know, did, you know, put up some pretty big numbers. And you have to remember now, I was facing a lot of pitchers and a lot of players who were using steroids. So, you know, you look at some of the big names where, you know, some of the guys have admitted they used the steroids. They were dominant pitchers and, you know, had success off of them and, you know, played against dominant players and had success against their team. So maybe that's a factor that needs to be taken into consideration. But, you know, there's always going to be an argument, you know, this time of the year for, you know, the different players. And that's just the way it is. So I felt like I, you know, was pretty dominant for a nice, you know, a nice stretch considered playing against guys that were, you know, using PEDs.
Kenny Lofton always says he kind of got lost in the shuffle of the, you know, the PED era. But I never pictured you as being lost in the shuffle. You always kind of, you stood out. I mean, whether guys were cheating or not, I mean, you know, you were kind of the face of the Indians, those great Indians teams, you know, starting in 95 and you know, I mean, 94, you could see it coming when the strike hit. And then, you know, 95, the World Series, you know, it just seemed like, the team kind of revolved around you. Was there something, where did you get that confidence from? Or it just seemed like you were such... on the field, you were such an intimidating intimidating hitter, it seemed like to me.
I've been a confident baseball player since I was even, you know, playing Little League back, you know, here in, you know, Shreveport, Louisiana. And I just, you know, played on a couple of Little League teams where we dominated and we went undefeated. And, you know, as you move up to Pony League, we're pretty dominant. And then, you know, as the talent got better in high school in American Legion ball, you know, the talent got better. So I had to, you know, to work harder and improve my skills and, you know, continue to improve. I was never satisfied with just kind of resting on my laurels, and I always wanted to work hard and get better. And you know, even when we went to, you know, LSU, you know, to be able to, get with the program that had been, you know, a bad baseball program for a while, to be able to get there and like turn it around and, you know, we didn't win the College World Series, but we went to the College World Series to kind of set up the dominant 90s team, you know, that won five, you know, World Series during that time. But to be the starting point, you know, for these powerhouse teams, you know, I take great pride and, you know, just working hard and, you know, and I was, fortunate enough to be able to play with some guys, you know, where we could communicate and we could always figure out, you know, how can we make ourselves better? How can we make our teams better? You know, how we could push ourselves and get to the next level.
Albert, you know, a lot is made today about the analytics and the approach that the teams are taking to, not just pitching, but hitting as well. Where, you know, you were a guy who really studied pitchers and studied at bats and went back and kept track of what you did against certain pitchers. You know, where would you fit in? You know, in today's game, with this sort of analytics approach, and you know, you've got guys who are striking out, you know, 150 times a year, but hitting, you know, 30, 40 home runs. Would you fall? You know, between the guys who adhere to the analytics, or would you be, you know, the home run or nothing guy?
I would consider myself to be the same. I would have the same approach. I'm not sure where exactly it started happening that people considered a walk just as important as a base hit. Base hits, you know, when you look at, you know, guys when you consider for the Hall of Fame, you know, Adrian Beltre, 3,000 hits, Albert Pujols, 3,000 hits. Nobody's ever been considered like, oh, well, this guy got 3,000 walks. Let's get him in the Hall of Fame. So it's always been about hits. And as a hitter, that should be the most important aspect. And I'm not sure exactly why players don't want to try to hit 300 and get base hits because, you know, if you look at the Boston Red Sox, you know, yes, their strikeouts were up, but they mainly put the ball in play. You have to put the bat on the ball and you have to put pressure on the opposing defense to make plays. And you have to put pressure on opposing pitchers. So for some way or some time, baseball let the, I call them the saber idiots, they let these guys come into the game and they just throw out information. And I think a lot of time it's like too much information. And some of these players don't know how to process it. There was things that I did where I just kind of tried to simplify everything because I didn't want to be fed like too much information because then that creates chaos. But my main goal was to get base hits. And because I was, you know, bigger and stronger, you know, the ball's going to, you know, go out the park, you know, 30, 40 times a year. So, but, you know, when you look at my stats, the season that I was most proud of was 1998 when I got 200 hits. And if you look at baseball this year, nobody got 200 hits.
Mm-hmm. Along with 49 you know, home runs and 152 RBIs. That's yeah, a hell of a
so,
season,
you know,
Albert.
It was kind of like the motto that the you know the Red Sox took was like to do damage. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you get base hits, 200 hits, you know, you're going to hit a lot of homers. You're going to drive in a lot of runs. You know, we didn't win as many games as we like, but, you know, to be able to go out there and do damage, you know, that was the main goal. And, you know, I feel obviously had I, you know, got a chance to get, you know, the full season in 95, you know, that's an extra 18 games, I would have gotten the 200 hits then and done a lot more damage. So I think baseball is eventually going to come back full circle to that and kind of weed all this information out of the game because it's just killing the game because if you look at, you know, in the mid-90s, I think an American League game averaged about 2 hours and 50 minutes, and I think a National League game averaged like 2 hours and 40 to 2 hours and 45 minutes. And now, why is the game longer when everybody's striking out more? You would think the game would be sped up, but it's gonna come full circle back to they're going to get rid of all these saber idiots and go back to hiring, you know, guys who you know, been a part of the game, that understand the game and realize that, you know, a base hit is very important and also, you know, wins, you know, for the team and also for the individual pitchers.
Well, for somebody who was growing up watching, you know, back in those 90s teams, I would have loved to have seen you guys play with the StatCast machines at least to measure how far those home runs went when you hit them. Or you know the exit velocity. I would have loved to have seen Albert Bell's exit velocity on a baseball. That would have been exciting.
Albert, well, you know the funny thing about that is like I would have never had anybody come up to me and tell me about exit velocity because I'm like I don't want to hear that. whether the home run went in the front row or whether it went at the back of the stadium. Whether it went to right field, left field, it doesn't matter about the exit velocity. A home run's a home run, like, and that's just the way I feel. It's just, you know, you put a good swing on the ball with a little, you know, upward arch, and, you know, the ball got out of the stands. But the most important thing is what did that home run do? Did that help tie up the game in the late innings, or was it a game winner, or, you know, was there multiple runners on base to, you know, to come from behind to win? So, that exit velocity, yes, it's like a nice little exciting stat, but I'd rather be focused on what the home run did.
You know, Albert, when talking to Jim Thome, he said those teams that he played on with you, you know, and Manny Ramirez and all those guys, Baerga and Lofton. He said that there were times when he would walk on the field before games, and they would, and you guys would know that you, the other team was already beat, just because of, you know, the talent you had and how aggressive you guys were offensively. Did you feel that that way?
Yeah, we were. You know, we were. You know, when you go look back at us, you know, like 91, 92, 93. You know, we played on some bad teams and we took our share of the lumps. And we always said that, okay, you know what? We're gonna get our revenge at some point. You know, we're gonna remember all these bad games we played against these bad, you know, these better teams that whooped up on us, and we're gonna turn around and we're gonna whoop up on them. And, you know, that's what happened, you know, 94, 95, 96. It's like, oh, okay, now it's time for us to you know, it's time for payback. And you know, after a while, these other teams knew. It was like, oh, okay, you know, we're going to try our best, but, you know, we're just going to, you know, they're just going to outplay us. And that's what we did. And, you know, we had a nice group of young players mixed in with some nice veterans who kind of helped us take our game to the next level with a lot of, you know, experience that they had, you know, 10, 15, you know, 20 years, you know, playing the game. So that was really helpful for us. And, you know, we were just a team that we just always rooted for everybody. You know, there was no haters on the team. We didn't care who was the hero. We just wanted to stay focused. We wanted to be aggressive on the bases. We wanted to put the ball in play. And we wanted to, the pitchers wanted to work fast and, you know, let the hitter, you know, let the opposing hitters either strike out or put the ball in play, work fast and, you know, get us back into the dugout so we can hit more.
What was the team that you particularly took pleasure in? It was there anyone that, on that sort of revenge tour thing after coming up through the early 90s and saying, you know, when we get good, we're going to get back at these guys? Was there anybody you took a particular pleasure in beating up on?
It was pretty much everybody. You know, everybody we played. Like, you know, I didn't, you know, discriminate. You know, there was, you know, at some point when you lose 100 games, I mean, just about everybody's whooping up on you. So it was just, you know, an opportunity to say, hey, you know what, we're just going to dish out, you know, butt kicking to everybody. We're not going to discriminate. We're just going to beat whoever's in the way. You know, and most of the time, you know, we did that. You know, obviously, you know, we were pretty dominant at home. And, you know, we were able to play pretty good on the road.
Albert, when you kind of measure your stats against these guys that are on the ballot with you right now, that's going to be decided Sunday, what do you remember about a guy like Carter or Joe Carter? I think maybe you played with him early in your career in Cleveland.
Yeah, he was there in 89 and 90. You know, I got called up in 89. And I remember, you know, getting called up from AA, and everybody was kind of like, uh-oh, like, wow, they're calling up players from AA. Okay, so we better start, like, picking up the pace. And I just remember, like, Joe Carter got hot. And, you know, the second half, like, he got hot. I think he hit, like, 21 homers in the second half, and he got to 100 RBIs. And, you know, he kind of carried the team. And, you know, everybody kind of picked up the pace and, you know, he kind of was like the, you know, the rah-rah guy. Hey, let's pick it up. And, we actually played some pretty good baseball at the end of 99. But he was always, you know, a great leader, you know, as a young player. You know, I had like thousands of questions I would ask him. And, you know, he was always, you know, he always answered them and stuff. And, you know, he just knew it was a matter of time before he was going to get traded to another team. But, you know, he would have liked to have, you know, stayed in Cleveland and play his career there, but that didn't work out.
What about Hershiser?
You know what, I kind of categorize him with, you know, with the Dennis Martinez, where, you know, they're guys who, you know, like, they knew it was like, oh, okay, like, you know, I can kind of relax because I know the team's going to score like 4, 5, or 6 runs. So, you know, let me, you know, they can afford to pitch and be really aggressive because they know it's like, oh, okay, I don't have to fine tune everything. I can be more aggressive and, you know, and pitch to my strength. And that's what those two guys did. And, you know, we used to tease, you know, Oral and call him Tony Lasorda Jr. And, you know, so that was his nickname. But, you know, I like the fact that, you know, I like anybody who runs out there every day. You know, those guys wanted the ball, you know, the fifth day. And, you know, they gave it all they had. You know, obviously, they weren't in the prime of their career. But, you know, I saw those guys working hard. They were working hard just as hard as we were. And they keep their, you know, pitch selection pretty sharp. And, you know, it was a nice little run for us. I just wish that, you know, we could have done it for a little longer.
Yeah.
Albert, you know, you follow the Indians, the current club, or are you watching? And who on the club right now impresses you with, you know, not just the way that they play the game, but also, you know, how they carry themselves on and off the field?
You know what? I like, I still like Brantley. I was glad to see him, you know, bounce back and come back and play. It was kind of a year where it was a little different than 2000, you know, the 2016 season was just kind of magical. And this one, it was just kind of like sputtered kind of the whole season. Couldn't quite get the bullpen organized. And I think a big factor was that they didn't want to re-sign Brian Shaw, who ate up a lot of innings in the bullpen and, you know, who was getting, I think he was getting like 80 appearances a year.
Something like
and
that.
And it just kind of threw the bullpen out of whack, and they just couldn't find the right solution. And then, you know, eventually it cost them playoffs. And but that started, you know, that starting pitching staff and that lineup, you know, was pretty good. It's just they just couldn't put it all together to go all the way.
What I know you came up, Charlie Manuel, I think, managed you in the minors. And then was your hitting coach in Cleveland. He told me a story that you were hitting. He was throwing you BP, and you hit one back through the screen, and it grazed his head, and he was bleeding or something. And you said, "Hey, you want a minute?" He goes, "No, let's go. Let's keep going. Let's keep." And he kept throwing you BP. Is that? Do I have that right?
Yeah. You know, Charlie was. The thing about those nets, I mean, they were kind of like double sided, so you didn't think anything would get through that. But, you know, the way the team, we took so much batting practice, and we just kind of wore those nets out. And I mean, we were just focused on hitting line drives, and one of them kind of caught him by surprise, and it squeaked through there. And fortunately, I mean, unfortunately, it just grazed him. Because it was a missile, and you know, but that's how Charlie was. He was like, "No, I'm okay." You know, he's been, you know, dinged up a few times for some you know, baseballs that hit him, but you know, he just kind of sucked it up and kept going. So you know, that was the great thing about Charlie Manuel. I mean, you know, he never got tired. He always wanted to see us hit, and you know, he used to always tell us that, you know, he was the biggest front runner. So whoever was hot, that's who he was rooting for. You know, he was running. He was the biggest front runner of us all. So he wanted to know who was going to be the, you know, the hottest guy, you know, that day. And, you know, he pushed us, and, you know, we worked on hitting. And, you know, he put in just thousands of hours and put in a lot of time. And, you know, I tip my hat off to Charlie. And, you know, to see him, you know, get a chance to manage and win a World Series. So I was happy for him.
With, you know, Albert, do you think, you know, you have not always had the best relationship with guys like me and Joe, and do you think that...
he means the media, not just us personally.
But do you think that hurt you the first time around on the BBWA ballot? I mean, you were only on, I think, maybe 1 or 2 years.
Probably, but it was kind of like, you know, it's Albert's world, and Albert's going to do the things he needs to do to be successful. You know, I had a lot of information, a lot of secrets that I wanted to keep secret about being successful, and I didn't want to reveal that. You know, some of you guys, know about, now about the index cards and stuff, but it was just so much information I just wanted to keep private and didn't want it to get out and, to give away the secrets to my success. And, you know, I should have been a little bit more accessible to the media, like after the games, but I just wasn't. I was just kind of in my own little world. I kind of did my own thing. And, it may be penalizing me still to this day, but, that's just, something that I should have worked on. And, it's going to cost me, but, I'm proud of the fact that, I kind of did things my way. I wanted to play baseball till I was age 40. Unfortunately that didn't work out, but to be able to play Major League Baseball is a dream come true. I got a chance to see people around the country. I mean, I haven't seen in years, whether it was family, friends from high school, college, Little League. So it was fun. I got a chance to do a lot of community work in the Cleveland area, and living there, I got a chance to do a lot of things in the Shreveport community, the Baltimore community, Chicago community. So it was a lot of things that I have to be proud of. Looking back on it, I probably should have been a little bit more accessible, to the media as far as doing things in the public and in the community, but there's still time. I can always make it up.
Albert, other players have left in free agency, have left Cleveland. Jim Thome left in free agency. There's about to be a mass exodus of players from the Indians leaving in free agency, and the way that the fans react to them, I think sort of depends on how much they were beloved and how meaningful they were to the team. So the reaction that the fans had when you first came back after leaving in free agency, does that play any sort of a part or any bearing on your decisions to not attend Hall of Fame, Indians Hall of Fame inductions, or the reunion from the 1995 team? Because those are things that are always brought up, but we'd like to hear from you what your position on that is. Did the fans' reaction and the scorn that was so palpable at that time, 20 some years ago, did that play any part in those decisions?
The main thing that played in the decision is I'm mad at Bobby DiBiaseo because he did not give me a video tribute that I wanted. I saw when LeBron came back to Cleveland and gave him a video tribute, and I was like, Bobby DiBiaseo should have given me a video tribute. So I'm still mad at him about that. But I can understand, the fans, reacting, being upset. I never thought in a million years I thought I was going to be playing my whole career in Cleveland, and it didn't work out that way. But I was surprised, with the reception I got. But it was just that's just the way they felt. But the fans shouldn't have been mad at me because. The Indians had a golden opportunity starting from spring training through the end of the year to get a deal done. And, they could have done the deal, but they didn't do it. So, I ended up looking like the bad guy leaving. But I just kind of exercised my market value and left. And I think that's what a lot of the players are going to do. You see the Indians are basically trying to, trim payroll. And I think they may be surprised. They think they still have a cakewalk, in the division. But They may be surprised next year. You know, maybe some of these other teams may surprisingly start winning. But it's unfortunate that they're not going all out to win a World Series, to win a baseball championship. But, you know, Dolan is the owner. That's the way he wants to do things. Unfortunately, it's pissing a lot of fans off. And, you know, to kind of simulate that is, you know, I'm a Minnesota Vikings fan, and we probably will never win a Super Bowl in my lifetime.
Hey, but they've been to four of them. And,
you know, what's that?
They've been to four of them. They just can't win one, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, they, you know, I just want them to go to a Super Bowl so I can go, you know. But at least I know the owner is like spending money and trying to bring in players to win, and that's all I can ask for as a fan. You know, we thought Kirk Cousins was a better option. You know, we never know, but at least I know the owner's trying to win, and I know for the Cleveland Indian fans, I wish. They felt the same way about Dolan.
Well, what do you think of that that stadium up there, U.S. Bank Stadium? Have you seen that the place that the Vikings play? It's gorgeous.
Yeah, that's a pretty sweet stadium. But I noticed because they play on that turf, there's like always like during the game, there's always like six or eight guys that get caught up on that turf and they end up limping off the field. And I was just like, how are these guys in the pro football play on turf? I mean, that has to hurt.
Well, that
I
was,
mean,
it was even, different.
Even playing on grass.
It was a different kind of turf back when you played. You know, the turf was more like a carpet. This is actually like simulated grass that they play on now. Could you imagine chasing after balls in the gap with you know, those little pellets of rubber flying up in your face?
Yeah, I couldn't. I mean, I'd take the old school turf at least. At least you know the ball was going to scoot through the infield a lot faster. So that was one good thing about playing on turf is the ball does get through the infield and outfield a lot faster.
Yeah, well, and you dive on it and you need a skin graft afterwards.
Albert, how are your hips? How are you getting around? I know you've had one maybe partial replacement. That was the injury that kind of ended your career, right?
Yeah, in 2007 I had it was called a hip resurfacing. In 2012 I did the left hip, so it's not a full replacement. Now that the winter time is coming, obviously, or maybe I'm getting old. It's just that the cold weather just kind of affects you a lot more. It's just, you know, harder to move around. But in the springtime, you know, I'm in. You know, bouncing off the walls and exercising and running around and outdoors. And I did do the Pat Tillman run / walk. So that was like 4.2 miles.
All right.
So I competed in that. So I was proud to do that because, you know, I really had, it took me about 2 months to get in shape to walk that, well, to walk fast that far. So, you know, it kind of brought out the competitive juices because I was in like one of the last, they call them corrals. So I was like in the last corral and I was with some friends. And then there in the corral in front of me, because you basically kind of sign up by the time you think you're going to finish the race. Mm-hmm. So two corrals in front of me were like these four ladies in tutus. and I told those people, I said, my goal is I am not going to let those four ladies beat me today. I said, if I have to, like, knock them off the road, I'm going to beat them. I say, that's my goal for today. Yeah, so.
Did you beat
you know,
them?
You just, you know, yeah, I ended up catching them and, like, because they left, because you leave your corral, like, every, I think it was, like, every minute or every 2 minutes. So I caught them at, like, within the first mile. Because I'm like, I'm not going to let them beat me today. That's for sure. That's my goal.
Albert, do you still I know you've come back to Cleveland, you know, not, and I think you've done some of the guest things with the Indians, been an Indians ambassador, or am I wrong there? But
I did it a while ago, and you know, DiBiasio contacts me, you know, a few times to come back, but we just haven't kind of reached an agreement on things.
But what's been the reaction of people when you come back? I would imagine it's got to be positive because you played so well here. I mean, is that what you've encountered when you do come back?
Yeah, you know what? I think they're kind of surprised to see me because they're like, oh. Are you Alvin? I'm like, yeah. They're like, oh, okay. Like, you know, they want to, you know, they're not expecting to see me, but, you know, I kind of sneak in and out of town, and, you know, there's a couple golf courses I wanted to play. I finally got a chance to play them, so I'll sneak in town and play. So, one of these days we'll figure it out.
Yeah, you should. The next Hall of Fame, you know, the Indians Hall of Fame, when they have an induction, I think it'd be great if you came back. I think the fans would love it. I really do. It would. I think it would surprise you.
Okay. Well, you know what? You guys got to pressure DiBiasio because I still want that video tribute.
Oh, they will. Have you seen the scoreboard that they have now? They will give you a video tribute like you can't believe on that screen. That's pretty amazing.
That'd be great if you did.
Okay.
Hey, Albert, it's been great talking to you. And listen, good luck Sunday. You know, I think when you look at that ballot, I think you have great credentials. I think you've got a chance. I think it is a difficult thing, but you know, Trammell and Morris got in last year on another kind of offshoot of the Veterans Committee. So there's always hope. And hey, have a good Christmas. Good holidays. I hope your family's well.
Can I bring up one more point?
Absolutely.
Okay, so I just want to bring this up. You know, when you talk about the Hall of Fame, I think this is the time where we need to induct Pete Rose into the Hall of Fame. I think he's served his punishment enough. I think, you know, Rob Manfred needs to take the bull by the horns. We need to go ahead and forgive this guy. And, you know, because when you look at his stats, I mean, over 4,000 hits, the things he's done for the game of baseball before, you know, the bad stuff happened, I think we need to forgive him. And as a fellow baseball player, I wish all the, you know, the other players and all the Hall of Fame players kind of rally around this situation and get him. Just tell him, you know what, you can't manage, you can't even coach like a little league team. Just go into the Hall of Fame, be a fan, eat, you know, sit in the stands, get you a beer and a hot dog and enjoy baseball. But this guy should definitely be in the Hall of Fame on the next year.
Do you think that there's a groundswell or a support out there for Pete Rose in some capacity?
It should be. I mean, you know, he's served his time. He's been punished long enough. And I think, you know, some of the current players now with social media, they can even be involved, you know, for some of those kids who like the history of the game. You know, we can be mad at him for whatever reason. We've been mad at him long enough. It's time to forgive him, you know, let him in the Hall of Fame. Let him enjoy this because I don't want to wait until Pete Rose has passed and gone away and he gets in that way. Go ahead and let him get him in now. And just let him enjoy, you know, the Hall of Fame because he deserves it, man. That's a long time to play and get 4,000 plus hits. That's like every kid's dream is to play that long to get that many hits. So
that's, Albert,
I think it's time for us to acknowledge him.
It's a high mountain. And I can't see it happening, but I respect your point of view, but I don't see it happening. I really don't.
Hoynes, baseball loves a great comeback story. Come on,
yeah,
everybody deserves a second chance,
Manfred,
right?
Manfred, you know, went through the case when he first became commissioner. You know, they had appealed to him, and to Rose and his attorney had appealed to him to reopen the case, and he did, and he still didn't let him in. So I think. You know, I there's a lot of people that feel like you, but I think it's a tall task to get him in the Hall of Fame.
Well, you'd have to take it out of the voters' hands in some way. It would have to be some sort of unilateral appointment or something like that. There's no way that it's going to get, you know, the writers at least aren't going to vote.
I would like to know how the Hall of Fame players, how do they feel about this? Just kind of like with the Heisman.
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. I know, you know, there's some guys, I mean, Johnny Bench and Joe Morgan, his teammates, you know, I can't speak for them, but I think it's a tough sell. I do. I really do. But who knows? Yeah.
Hey, well, maybe they'll hear this podcast, and this will be the impetus to get the players in support and get Charlie Hustle into the Hall of Fame. Albert, thank you so much for the time. For going on 40 minutes here of just some great stuff from you, and it's a pleasure to hear from you, and just to get an update on what's going on with you, Hoynsie. Hoynsie was in your back pocket every day for, you know, 8-9 years.
Albert wanted to kill me a couple times, I think.
I just gave you the evil look.
That was enough, believe me. That was enough.
All right, Albert. Thank you so much. Best of luck this week. And, you know, we'll hope to hear from you. Well, maybe we'll do another podcast with the newly elected Hall of Famer next week.
Good luck, Albert.
Okay. You guys have a good holiday.
Same with you.